Hello, hello. It is Celeste Burke Nicely here on the Sales Edge podcast. Super excited to welcome the lady of LinkedIn, a female who is out there advocating for other women in sales and marketing. I'm so excited to interview you today and hear your story, Ashley. Ashley, tell us a little bit about what's been going on in your role. Well, first of all, if you're listening, you won't be able to see her t-shirt. If you watch this on YouTube, you will. It says, I hope this email finds you well. That's a whole nother topic that I'm sure you're diving into. But please, let's stop using, I hope this email finds you well. I actually wrote back to someone the other day, like, it did not find me well. They didn't respond, but I love those. So tell me about what's going on in your world, Ashley.
Yes. So I am in a unique spot right now. I've been in sales for 11, 12 years, at least tech sales, a long time. And I just recently took probably my longest time away that was not maternity leave. So I'm coming off about a month and a half of time off, and I'm starting a new role in a week-ish. So very different for me. Usually I'm hustle, so this is great. But in my downtime, I actually rejoined a roller derby league. So I've been playing roller derby is actually what I've been doing the past couple of weeks, besides the podcast and all of that good stuff. But
yeah. So your podcast, when I pinged you the other day, I was listening to your podcast with Samantha McKenna. Always such a pleasure to hear what she has to say about showing me, you know me. It can go not just about sales, but dating as well. Yep. And with our spouses, like, show me, you know me by listening to what I say. And also those nice things that we allude to with our spouse. So I think those words resonate beyond the sales org. So roller derby, how long have you been doing that?
I started skating in 2009, I believe. So a pretty long time. I skated pretty competitively for a long time and then had a couple breaks, had some babies, did all of that. And then COVID actually shut roller derby down for 2 years everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then moving to Portland, which I just recently did, the biggest roller derby team in the world is located here. So it's a very large league. And I decided to transfer in while I was in this transition. So just actually made a home team. So I actually get to be on a team within the league, which is really exciting. So
dang. I've never seen roller derby in action. I always thought it was like pretty badass, especially on the women's team. I'm forgetting the movie that
Whip It.
Yes. So I did see that. That's about as close to roller derby. Well, it now makes sense, the skates that you have on your LinkedIn profile. Yes. So you've been in and around the sales space, probably very similar parallels to roller derby with like the ups and the downs, the opponents, your competition in sales. Mm-hmm. You don't know what to expect, a lot of preparation. Then it's go time. Did you fumble? Not like a football, but
fumble your body
over your skate and you fell. Do you have bruises? You have to pick yourself back up. So as you've navigated this sales roller coaster, we'll call it, what has stood the test of time for you? Kind of your sales edge, your it factor that helps you to stand out.
Yeah. So I think I have a little bit of a unique, not that unique anymore, background where I started in retail sales before I moved into tech. And working retail hours really sucks. If anybody's ever done it, that's the worst. I was selling eyeglasses. I was an optician. Moving into tech where I was able to work from home sometimes or remote or all of those things, I was so grateful for it. And I think some of that like diverse background where you have that hunger, because I was also making crap money compared to what you can make in this world of sales, that's kind of the edge, because you're like, well, I could be slanging glasses and making 35K a year instead of what I'm doing now. This is so much better. I am not going to let this opportunity pass me by. But I think truly at the core of it is that every time I'm in a sales role, I have to feel like I'm helping people. So I have to figure out like what is the thing that's actually making someone's life better. When I come into a conversation believing that I'm helping someone instead of feeling like I'm selling them something or trying to trick them, it's always just a better way to feel about yourself. I think just makes everything better for everyone. So that was kind of two answers.
But yeah, yes. I love that. We talk often on our team about really detaching from the outcome. And a lot of sellers I know are so tied to what's my quota? Where am I? I got to get the sale. This is what I have to close. And showing up, as Riley had said on one of our interviews, with this commission breath. I just did a webinar about it last week as well, about this detaching from the outcome. I actually broke it down when you're in sales, showing up to a conversation, ensuring that their life or the conversation is enriched and they're able to walk away with value and you shared your expertise, whether they ever do business with you or not. So it sounds like you're in that same vein. And where did that switch come from trying to sell to I'm here to help? When did you think you arrived at that place?
I don't think I ever wanted to be a salesperson. So my negative connotation, like the negative mind thought process of what sales was when I was in retail sales, I was embarrassed that I had a quota when I was selling glasses, because I was like, well, I'm supposed to be helping people pick out the right frame or like actually be able to see, right? And it felt a little slimy to also have a quota and be like, well, if I don't sell these glasses to this person, then I'm not going to hit my number. I had to kind of think about that as like, what am I doing that's going to help these people? And selling them these glasses is a good thing because they're going to be able to see. But when I actually got into tech, someone had to teach me the idea of the funnel. And I had never thought, oh, this is your goal and you go up and you have to put this much in the top. So as I'm learning Salesforce, they're teaching me about the funnel and they're telling me how I should be on calls. I was getting on the phone and I immediately was like, okay, but how am I helping these people? And so I've always done it. And it was one of those things where people looked at me like, what do you mean you're going with that? This is how I'm helping you. So it wasn't really a switch. I think it was something that I had to do in my brain to feel okay with the fact that I was a salesperson, because it took me several years to actually feel like I wanted to be a salesperson. It was a fake it till you make it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally realized that actually helping people is what sales is, that's when I was able to accept that I was a salesperson and feel proud of it, instead of being like, well, I'm in sales. So I think it came from trying to somehow lie to myself that sales was a good thing, but accidentally stumbling into what we're really supposed to be about anyway, which might be a little backwards. I think some people go into sales thinking like we have to trick people.
Yeah.
And I just, that never sat well with me. So I just didn't do that, even if that was the expectation.
Yeah, me neither. It's, you know, interesting. My background, I started in nonprofit, and then I got into sales because I saw all these people in sales and I thought, well, I want to be taken seriously. So let me get into a sales job. And then people would say, oh, you're in sales. And I would do the same, like, ick. Well, I'm not really, right? It's so gross.
Kind
and
of.
Then you arrive at this place of sales doesn't have to be icky. Like, we have to stop assigning this, putting all salespeople in a bucket. That just like your shirts.
Thanks, Will Aiken.
Right. Shout out to Will Aiken and his merch. It is when these behaviors are forced upon people or it's not natural and we're stepping outside of our natural abilities that, yeah, we're having to fake it and it doesn't feel natural to us nor comfortable. Mm-hmm. And the prospect can probably feel that too. And it's funny, Rachel, who's my coach in Gap Selling, because I'm a partner, I also get my own coaching every single week and my own one-on-one. So it's a lot of business development too. And a couple of weeks ago, she was like, would you stop with your stage presence on sales calls? And I was like, what do you mean? And she said, you go into this like, I'm presenting, I'm in corporate, this is what I am because of this. And I was like, I am. And it's funny because the other day I went and my husband got me a gift certificate for my birthday. So I was like, I'm out. I'm going to have some mom time. I never do this. And the ladies were like, you're so funny. And I was just being myself. Mm. And I realized like, that's what she's talking about on sales calls, like stop being so buttoned up. People can see through that. And I think that's what you're alluding to, this place of your showing up as your authentic self, really trying to help someone and detaching from the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, superpowers come in a lot of forms. And I think women carry those, especially those who have tiny little children around as well. You mentioned this remote shift. And I think there's a lot of myths of more work gets done in the office. How has that shift to remote work been, just from a quality of life standpoint for you?
Yeah. So I purposefully, one of my law of attraction things that I was focused on when I started in tech was work from home. I wanted remote. So I've been doing remote work for a lot longer than some of the people who started after COVID. I was remote, fully remote before that, with one short stint where I attempted to work in an office right after having my daughter. Oh. And so remote was something that was really important to me, but I'm also very extroverted. And when I got my first remote job, they said, hey, just want you to know, like, we're fully remote. Nobody is required to go into the office. You might be sad because you're not going to have a lot of people to talk to if you do come into the office, which for me was a good thing because being extroverted means I get very distracted when there are people in the office to talk to. So it's better for me to be home if I want to truly get the work done. That short stint where I was actually commuting downtown, I was in Chicago at the time, taking the Red Line train 45 minutes into, and I had an infant. So I would have to drop her off, hop on the train, walk downtown, get to the office. And I would get there. I was never the first one in the office because I had to drop her off, right? Like, that's not like I could get there at 7 a.m. And it was crazy because I would get there and I'd be like, all right, let's get to work. But people weren't actually doing anything. They got there early, but they weren't doing anything. And there'd be maybe an hour where people were on the phones and you could tell that they were working. But most of the time they're hanging out in the kitchen. My male coworkers that sat on either side of me would go to the gym for an hour and a half at lunchtime every single day. I wouldn't do that because I'm like, I got to get my work done so I can leave and go get my daughter because I have to get her before 5 o'clock or else I'm not even going to see her. So, and then I would be looked at like, oh, she's leaving at 4:30 again because it was the only way I was going to get where I needed to go. And that little brief stint, like I left that job purposefully to go back to a remote role because it just did not work with my lifestyle. I think that experience was very telling for me because I thought maybe I am missing out on something by not going into the office. And I can clearly say that's not true because it was horrible for my lifestyle. It was terrible for me. I was stressed all the time. I was rushing all the time. And when I was in the office, it was still like, felt like I wasn't getting anything done. So remote work, I promise you, if you've got people that you're forcing into the office, you're not getting as much work out of them. It's just not a thing. And if you've got parents on your team, it's just ridiculous. It's really weird to me that having people come in at 7 a.m. and leave at 6 o'clock, but take hours in the middle of the day to go to the gym and go have lunch and do all of these things, that's more okay than a mom who gets there as soon as she possibly can, works her butt off the whole day, leaves, and then probably logs in and does stuff again after her kids go to bed. Like, but the optics of that, they thought that guy was being more present versus the woman. And that's very not okay, right? So
totally. Yeah. I'm definitely in that camp with you. I remember doing that, right? Going back at 13 weeks and then you're pumping and you're constantly worried about that and sitting in meetings. And yes, if the clock is ticking, you're sitting in traffic and are you going to get there? Are you going to start to get charged because you're not picking up the child? You're in this constant state of high alert all of the time, which isn't a great place to be in if you're also trying to have work output. So kudos to you on knowing that that's something that you need not only for yourself, but also for your family, and that you can be just as productive, if not in the framework that fits your life, but that also shows your employer it doesn't really matter what the hours logged are. It is about the output and the productivity and giving back to the team and being part of it. And I've seen a lot of employers make a miss on that. So hopefully as this launches, you've selected a new place and you announced that and we can celebrate that you're still going strong and working remote into 2024. So the last question I asked guests, because I think it's so interesting. There's so much sales advice out there on what we should do, what not to do. And then it changes when new tech comes out or, you know, an influencer drops something. What is a sales myth that you'd love to support or bust that over the years was told to you and you've thought, I'm not so sure about that anymore?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think one of my biggest pet peeves, and this is maybe a sales myth, is that everyone has to start as an SDR and then be an AE and then go into leadership or whatever that looks like. I do not believe that every single person should be an SDR. I don't believe every single person is going to be good at being an SDR. And I also believe that people could be really great as AEs if they're not good at SDRs. And I think it all depends on the role, the company, the product, the segment. And I think it's really annoying when influencers or whoever comes out and says, well, you have to have full cycle, or you have to have SDRs, or you have to have your SDRs report to marketing, or like all of these different things that they're lumping into one spot where it's, that's just not the way it works. We need to adapt to what works for our prospects, our ICP, like what we're actually selling and to whom. Because if we're selling an enterprise, very true enterprise thing, an SDR is probably gonna have a very hard time jumping into that and doing a really, really good job. Versus if you have a super short transactional sales, taking an enterprise seller who's a closer and popping them in there, they're gonna have a really hard time. And I think that it's a miss to pay them all these like, oh, well, an enterprise seller is worth so much more than a transactional seller. I don't think that's true. I think that they are just totally different skill sets. And I'm sick of everyone getting lumped into buckets and not being allowed to try different things. If you fail at being an SDR, that doesn't mean you're not gonna be a killer closer. If you fail at SMB, like super quick wins, that doesn't mean you're not going to be amazing at enterprise. I think it's doing us a disservice as an industry to tell somebody, well, maybe sales isn't for you because you weren't good at these SMB. It's a totally different skill set to sell transactionally than it is to nurture someone for over a year to get them to sell. I think people who can do both are very rare, but it's awesome. And I just think it's unfair that you, like, I think that somebody who's an amazing SMB seller should be allowed to continue to do that and still continue their career and be really successful and make a ton of money without ever feeling pressured to become a manager or go into enterprise sales. I just don't think that that's the way that it should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you're going for with myths.
Yeah, but totally on board with you there. I remember my first sales job. I didn't have management experience. I'd never sold anything. I'd never been in the industry. I went through 7 interviews and I got the job, and it set the precedent for that company that somebody doesn't have to check all those boxes in order to excel. And when we are checking the boxes as an organization versus looking at it as like a puzzle, right? How are we fitting people together? What are we lacking in one, and constantly massaging that, finding better success versus, like you said, a lot of people posting, lots of times it's men. Sorry, I'm just going to say it, but I don't see a lot of women out there posting, this is the path that you have to go. And especially now when we're trying to elevate women's voices, there are non-traditional ways in order for you to get into sales leadership. To be an AE doesn't mean you have to excel here, have won some award or crush quota. I mean, there are amazing sales leaders out there that don't have great track records in selling. And that's okay, because there's so many lessons learned in the losses and the opportunities than in always having a win. So I agree. I don't think trophies matter. Just like in roller derby, you probably learn a lot from every time you fall and have a misstep or you check someone. I don't know if it's called checking. I'm sure it can be. When you're leaning your body into them, you're learning all of those nuances, but you learn a lot through the losses, not always the wins. And sometimes that is often overlooked. So thank you so much for shedding light onto that. Any final words? Tell us your podcast. Where can people find it? What can they expect from it?
Yep. So Ashley and Katrina's Infinite Revenue Playlist. It is me and my co-host, Katrina Redden. It's sponsored by ComSource, so big fan of them, and Mac Redden, who also does this for us without any expectation of ROI to produce the podcast. The whole point is elevating women in revenue. So sales, marketing, success, anybody who's touching money, who is a woman in business, basically, that's who we want to talk to. And our idea is that by interviewing people like Sam McKenna and then interviewing people who maybe don't have that huge following but have something to say, we can get those voices out there so people can hear from women who are amazing and learn from them. And it's kind of fun because we do have that little twist where everyone picked the walk-up song. So there's also a playlist. So you can find the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. And then the actual playlist is also on Spotify if you want to hear all of the women's walk-up songs compiled together, which is it's a pretty good playlist.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. And I was thinking the other day, I have to hype myself. I'm an extrovert introvert. So I have to like pop myself on when I'm like going on camera or delivering a webinar. This year I did a webinar for 500 people. You get anxiety over that. So I like to play the Eye of the Tiger song.
Nice. Like totally. I don't know if anybody's picked that one yet.
Yeah, that would be it. Or, you know, we're huge into the Frozen playlist as well over here with my toddler. So that doesn't as much pump me up, but seeing my little one get pumped up. I so appreciate your time. Definitely people can connect with you on LinkedIn. You have a lot to say over there, elevating women's voices. And I'm so excited for this next chapter and to stay in touch. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.